My name is Ward Boston, Jr. I'm a retired Navy captain, United States Navy. I had a call recently from Ron Gaucher, who's an attorney in Los Angeles, who's very interested in the Liberty incident that gained quite a bit of notoriety in the last 36 years. 36 years ago, I was the counsel of the Court of Inquiry that was appointed by Admiral McCain in Cincinnati, as a result of the Israeli shooting up the USS Liberty on 8 June 1967. Admiral Kidd was appointed president of the court, I was appointed as counsel, and we flew up on the 7th of June to London and convened the court in London, and then left London and went to the Liberty. Admiral Kidd and I flew down to Crete and boarded Barry and then boarded Liberty while we were still in Egyptian waters, and stayed aboard for 2 days, 3 days, while I got the witnesses lined up. And then when we reached Malta, while the Court of Inquiry met with the other two captains out of London. Over all these years, that's 36 years now, it was 35 years last year, of course, when maybe Time printed a little article after they had called me and asked me if I was willing to, after all those years, talk about Liberty. I had refused to, over those years, to be interviewed or to be talked, or to talk to anyone about it, because Admiral McCain, Admiral Kidd, and Mr. McNamara, and President of the United States Johnson, all put a lid on any conversation any of us would have outside the court. And accordingly, I obeyed my orders over the years. But when I found out that other people were making statements that appeared to me to be contrary to the facts, as far as the facts I heard, as far as the inferences and the conclusions could be drawn from the facts as I knew them, I felt it's about time I was one of the few remaining people that was on the Liberty as a witness to the damage and the slaughter that had occurred. 34 lives were lost and 172 of thereabouts injured, some of them still carrying the marks. I felt it's time that I spoke up. And accordingly, when Mr. Jordan of the Navy Times called me and asked me if I would say it, I said yes. And since everybody else is shooting his mouth off, I'll be happy to comment what I think, my inference as a counsel. Accordingly, I made my statement to Mr. Jordan over a period of an hour or so, and naturally it was condensed or synopsized in the Navy Times. And as I recall, it said two skeptics of the Court of Inquiry conclusions, or of the incident, rather, two skeptics, namely Richard Helms, who was then the CIA director, and Captain Ward Boston, retired in Coronado, California, both say it was a deliberate attack by the Israelis. And I felt that, and I said it. Well, of course, that brought quite a bit of excitement from some people who disagreed with me. And one in particular, Mr. J.J. Crystal, the heading here, the United States Bankruptcy Court, Southern District of Florida, May the 8th, 1996. Well, Mr. Crystal had called me in 1990 and asked if he could interview me. And I, at that time, 1990, I said, no, I can't be interviewed because I've been told to keep my mouth shut by higher authority and officers obey orders. He asked me several questions, and of which I didn't feel would compromise. He asked my background. I told him I had been a naval aviator in World War II, that I flew off with three Jeep carriers, the Saratoga and the Ranger, and the Yorktown in combat. And the Yorktown was the only carrier I was flying in combat, but my air group, my fire squadron I was in, fire squadron lost one third of the power. So it was an impression that I developed about combat and about war that stayed with me all these years. And naturally, when I saw the damage to the USS Liberty, it refreshed my memory, the power of an airplane, even just without dropping any kind of heavy bombs, heavier than napalm or heavier than a .30 caliber or 30 millimeter, as I should say, and 20 millimeter cannons. It was horrendous, the slaughter was awful, and the whole incident left me shaken to the extent that it's hard to believe it was, couldn't have been anything but deliberate the way they approached trying to sink Liberty. Of course, Captain McGonagall all those years remained quiet, just like I had, and Admiral Kidd had. But Mr. Crystal, in his letter to me, was very upset that I had taken the position that it was a deliberate attack. And he said he was writing a doctoral thesis, and that he had gone to Harvard to get part of that as a presentation, and an invitation of some committee in Harvard. And he sent me a copy of that. Well, he quoted in that article, that which he included with this letter, United States Bankruptcy Court, May 8, 1996, he quoted, he had interviewed Admiral Kidd, and he said in the early 90s. But in that article that he sent, he said Admiral Kidd hadn't talked to anybody way after that period. And I believe Admiral Kidd had not talked, because when Crystal called me the first time in 1990 and wanted to interview, I said that no, I couldn't. But then I read gave you my background as far as naval aviator, and that I'd been in the FBI for a couple of years as an investigator. But I returned to the regular Navy as a lawyer in Korea during the early days of Korea. I spent the next rest of my 35 years as a lawyer instead of the 8 years, on top of the 8 years of fire pilot. But anyway, I said, no, I couldn't be interviewed. I suggested that he call Admiral Kidd, and maybe Admiral Kidd could fill in some cracks that I would get involved in. Since as counsel of the court, you're an advocate of the facts. You present the facts, but you don't, it's like going before a grand jury or a petit jury as a DA. You tell us, you give the facts, and the court reaches their conclusions on the facts. My conclusions were reached as an opinion that I garnered from hearing the witnesses who were still alive, and the witnesses who weren't in the hospital like so many of them were when we ordered Liberty. We were only able to interview those and put them on as witnesses at the Court of Inquiry who were still aboard the ship. The ones in the hospital, and many who later submitted letters to the Navy Department, had not done so to my knowledge at the time we wrapped the case up. The court up. We left the Malta. When we left London, Admiral McCain gave us 1 week to complete our court of inquiry. He said it was an international incident and that the people in Washington wanted it. Well, that size of the nature of that court was such, it could have easily taken 6 months if we went to every person who had any knowledge. But we were given 1 week and we completed it. And I used about 15 to 20 typists in London, because the chief who took the court for me on the ship used a steno mask, and they typed from each of the pages where they were developed so we could get it out in one night. But anyway, it was, I thought the facts were there. We've had some confusion, or not confusion, some criticism that it was not the smoothest record that could have been prepared. But I think under the circumstances and the time frame, the substance was there, and it went back to Washington with Admiral Kidd. Now, Admiral Kidd and I discussed the case repeatedly during the week that we had to prepare the court. And it wasn't a doubt in my mind, any more than doubt that his mind felt the same, that it was an intended attack, deliberate, well-planned, except not well-executed, because they didn't sink the ship. Why it didn't go down, I don't know, because when we boarded, damage assistance control, in my presence, said he told Captain McGonagall, Commander McGonagall, who was the captain of the ship, that he thought the ship was going to break in half from the huge hole in the hull. Fortunately, they shored it up, and we got the Malta. It was obvious from the surveillance that early morning of June the 8th that there wasn't any question that they could have determined and did determine it was an American ship. And I think the facts came out subsequently, and all of the articles have been written that especially the ones by Mr. Crystal, who went to Israel 15 times and was interviewed. We tried to go to Israel at the conclusion of the Malta hearing, but we were told, at least Admiral Kidd told me we were told, we couldn't go to Israel and talk to those people. So our ex parte or one-sided information was strictly our own people who were shot up and injured and killed. And of course, we didn't get any testimony from the dead ones, but the injured ones and the ones who were still aboard. I think I could not have reached any other conclusion, but I had no basis in order to come out. But since everybody has been talking and writing, and Mr. Chris has just written a book about his feeling about it, and the people who've endorsed the book, in my knowledge, or at least the information I have, I don't think any of them had any close bearing with the incident. The only one was the person who's now dead, and there again, the people who, the survivors and their vivid accounts are enough that I think more information could be forthcoming from the files that are still not been released. And I had received, after 36 years, I finally looked at a copy. I hadn't seen a copy of the old Court of Inquiry that I was responsible in being involved with. But after all those years, someone sent me a copy of it, and it doesn't appear to be all what I remember. But of course, after those many years, the mind sometimes doesn't remember it all actually. But I think that record doesn't have some of the pages that I have. And of course, the copy I have doesn't have all the pages, but. The bottom line is that there's no question in my mind, and as Mr. Helms and stated in his, but he said that even though he was director of the CIA at the time, that the CIA took a position it could have been an accident. And the Navy Department, after much back and filling, that came out with a statement to the effect that perhaps it could have been an accident. I don't remember any time that they said it was an accident, but they didn't, with the evidence that was available to us at that time. But I was not part and parcel of the conclusion that it was an accident. In my mind, and having been a World War II naval aviator, and seeing the damage that we could do with four Hellcats hitting one ship, it was clear in my mind they intended to sink Liberty. And I'm sure that they were disappointed they didn't. But after all these years, it's hard to imagine why our government still refuses to take a position that it was an accident. I will stop right now and see if there's a question in any area I missed.
Not so much areas that you missed, I'd just like to amplify, if I could. One thing that we forgot to do was get today's date.
Today's date is the
14th of June?
14th of June.
2003.
I'm trying to refresh my memory. This is real like I've lost my memory. But you know, today is the 14th because yesterday was the Friday 13th. Now, see, I'm not forgetful of that.
Another question. You certified the record. Could you speak to the issue of what your signature on the record meant? What was the significance of it?
Well, even though I've been accused of supporting the findings of the court, my position was as counsel of the court, and I was responsible to bring the witnesses before the court, put them under oath, asked initial questions, and after my questions were completed, to turn the witness over to the court members could ask their questions. When the record was completed, my signature said that that's what I was, had done. I wasn't swearing to the conclusions that had been reached or the findings of fact that had been reached. And that's not the position that the counsel of the court, presents the evidence, and that's what I did.
Also, Mr. Crystal has gone to great pains to create the impression that he and Admiral Kidd were close friends and that he was a confidant of Admiral Kidd. He dedicated his book to him. Do you have any reason to doubt that that's the case?
Well, my doubt would be predicated on when I called, I suggested to Mr. Crystal in 1990 that he call Admiral Kidd, because I would not discuss the Court of Inquiry. I did tell him my background, as I mentioned earlier, when he asked me, well, what was your position what's your pedigree or your education? And I went to college at William & Mary and law school. I had 2 degrees from William & Mary. And I came back in the regular Navy at the beginning of a career as a lawyer instead of a fighter pilot. I spent World War II as a fighter pilot and just carried, as I've already mentioned. And I spent 3 years in the Weekend Warriors in Norfolk flying FH-1s and Hellcats. My 8 years, and then after that, the rest of my 34 and a half, or right at 35 years active duty as a lawyer, a JAG type. Now, as far as any, I think your question was, Admiral Kidd, and he called me, and when Mr. Crystal called in 1990 and wanted to talk, I said, I will not discuss the court itself, or the findings, or the conclusions, but I will tell you, since you asked me what my background is, I told him what my background was, which I just reiterated. But when I suggested he call Admiral Kidd, and maybe Admiral Kidd would answer a couple of questions, I wasn't sure, because I hadn't seen Admiral Kidd. I talked to him a couple of 3 times on the phone, and when I retired, he stayed on and was Sink Lamp, Sink Lamp Fleet, and Sack Lamp, and then he retired from that position, as I recall, and then he stayed right there in Washington. And my daughter ran into him one day in the commissary at Cameron Station, and he asked about me, and she gave him my telephone number, and he called me, and we had about a three-hour conversation, just old times. But the time that Mr. Crystal called, and I said, well, call Admiral Kidd, maybe he can. And just to get him off my back, this guy, because I didn't want to compromise myself in the sense of saying one way or another or anything about the case, because I didn't give an orders like Admiral Kidd also didn't give. Then I had a call back from Admiral Kidd shortly after, about 2 hours later, and he wasn't too pleased with the idea of talking to Mr. Crystal, and he informed me of such, and the language he used, I don't think it's appropriate to relate now, but he didn't show any interest in talking about the case. When Mr. Crystal sent me this copy of this Harvard seminar, and I didn't recognize any of the people in the seminar with him, but in that, he said that, I was surprised because he said in the seminar that he tried to talk to Admiral Kidd repeatedly, and he wouldn't. And then he ran into a naval officer, and one of his, Mr. Crystal was a naval reserve officer, and he apparently ran into one in the Pentagon who suggested that he call Admiral Kidd. And based on this naval officer's, not request, but refer, and Admiral Kidd, according to Mr. Crystal, talked to him from early days 1990, whereas that didn't happen, and besides in his seminar transcript, which he sent me with this letter, said that he wouldn't talk to him. So it's obvious he's saying one thing and then reversing himself. And then he finally tries to say or concludes that he was a very close, intimate relationship with Admiral Kidd. And I don't know that I can refute that, because I was in California and Admiral Kidd in Washington, but I never heard Admiral Kidd discuss any kind of relationship with him. And several times we talked and spoke after that. So it surprised me that he would say that he had been interviewed Admiral Kidd. And he also, in that same transcript from the seminar, said that he interviewed me. Well, it wasn't an interview. It was a denial for interviewing it, but I didn't tell him my background, which I guess he went forward on that. And he said he interviewed one of the other captains on the board, but he didn't say what that captain said. So I'm not in a position to give an answer to why he would criticize his own statement.
Do you recall if Admiral Kidd expressed any unofficial and personal opinions at the time of the Court of Inquiry or shortly thereafter about the nature of the attack?
Well, he did repeatedly, because the 6 days that we were in Malta, and on the ship going to Malta, and then from Malta to London, well, after we'd had breaks, more than one time, he's a wonderful person. I mean, he had such an insight into many areas of naval involvement. And it just always amazed me that he could come out with a position that I had to think about for a while to get an understanding, but more than one time during during the break in the proceedings, he'd say, and he used the expletives a couple of times, and there's no good sense of doing that. And of course, he couldn't help from having that reaction, seeing the slaughter. And then when the naval attaché dropped a card and said, can anybody, or some words to that effect, anybody hurt or anybody need any help or whatever, and they casually, I think that was their last thing. This is so many years and hard for me to remember a lot of this, but he's flying over in a helicopter and still blood and head and bodies of him going on the deck. And did you have any casualties? It was like being in deck red almost. But as far as Admiral Kidd's comments, yes, he more than one time during that period. And then when he left to go to Washington and I left to come back to Naples, I didn't see him for about a week or 10 days. And when he came back, he was not subdued, but he had it. And that's what he also said, that the political scene is such that the party line is that we can't talk, we can't say anything, and we don't. But there was a newspaper or TV commentator, his name, I don't know, Irving R. Levine. I believe his last name was Levine. But anyway, he was in Rome. I think he was in NBC or CBS correspondent in Rome. Somewhere or another, he got the permission for Admiral Kidd to be interviewed. But Admiral Kidd took me with him and told me to shake my head and know if he shouldn't answer. I mean, not that I was smart enough to tell him when not to answer, but he wanted legal guidance to that extent, I'm sure. And we went to Rome, but Admiral Kidd stayed well within the parameters of non-disclosure or anything. And actually, I don't remember if I guess they ran that interview, but I don't remember the result. But of course, I wasn't interviewed. Admiral Kidd was. But no, he was very, very open with me that he thought it was an intended attack from the surveillance on. And with his background, my background, I mean, there wasn't any area of argument there that the planes made too many passes and saw him in such a position that the ship's name was clearly visible, and it was not the same configuration as the Egyptian by a long shot. And they shot, everything they did was obviously premeditated, from shooting the masts off, from shooting the flags off, from shooting up the life rafts that one of the witnesses testified to. And then, you know, people say, well, it's not in the record. Well, there is a reference in the record. I think a Lieutenant Painter referred to as seeing your life wrapped shot up. But there again, when I'd hear the witnesses testify, it was so shocking that, and especially when they said, well, there was a 50 caliber gun mounts that were firing at the PT boats or at the torpedo boats. And I think Captain McGonigal said that he looked out and said, told one of the people still alive to tell them to stop shooting. And the people in the gun mounts were all shot up. They didn't have their head gone, their bodies shot to pieces. And the guns were cooking off by themselves from the heat of the fire because they had set the, you know, the gasoline in the containers of fire. So as we walked through those witnesses, and it was just a shocking. But it was also shocking to see the bravery. Now, there's a doctor, I think his name was Kiefer. And I didn't realize until after I heard the witnesses that he was also injured. And he worked at something like 28 hours without stopping. And Captain McGonigal went through the whole thing, half the time on his back, navigating with the stars. So in the end, if nothing else, I think the USS Liberty, USS Liberty, you never put a V in front of a naval vessel, but USS Liberty, case should be reopened for nothing but to show the valor, the heroism, and the odds that those people took on to survive. I'm not apologizing for the court of inquiry because with all the witnesses I had available in that short time, and used them to try to reach the findings of fact at the court. But it's one of those situations where when political action takes over, when you're told by the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense to keep your mouth shut, don't say anything, and that's a direct order, and you've taken an oath to support it, the Constitution and the orders, and even if you don't consider it a valid order, it's not your business to stand up and yell at the world that the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense are covering up for political reasons. And all those years, it's been in my heart that the survivors deserve more recognition than they've received. And it's unfortunate that Captain McGonigal wasn't even given his Medal of Honor in the White House, where the normal but was shunted over to the Navy Yard, and the Secretary of the Navy presented it to him. And that the four or five unknown bodies, or the known names, but they didn't have bodies, they're buried in Arlington, they don't refer to being killed by the Israelis, which the facts should reflect if they were killed in combat, which they certainly were. Though it's still a horrendous event that stays in my mind and heart. And even though I lost friends in World War II, and I never expected to live during World War II, but I was young and dumb, I guess, or young and they say the young die, but I lived through it, and I had those memories. But when I saw the results of Liberty, and then I see apologists that stand up and try to justify what the Israelis did, it bothers me. It bothers me from the heart out. And I said that to Mr. Jordan when he called. And of course, I opened up the hornet's nest. And I've had many more people call and thank me for saying what I said and what my position is, like Mr. Helms' position. Both, it's funny, I didn't ever met Mr. Helms, but Mr. Hoover, who I worked for, was a great patriot, I thought. And I think Helms was just as great. And I know what he went through when he was mistreated by the people in Congress by badgering him to the point where he had to plead for a misdemeanor on a matter that shouldn't have ever happened. It almost killed a man because he did a great job for the country. And when he said that he was satisfied that he deliberately attacked the Israelis, and I didn't know what he was saying when I said it, so it's funny that both of us were tuned in and were quoted. But the survivors of Liberty have said repeatedly that they've been humiliated and hurt, that they haven't had their day in court as far as having all the facts. And I'm not apologizing for records. I've tried to find everything that's available, but the door was shut in our face, and we were given a time frame of 1 week, then we did what we had to. And I crossed swords with a couple of people on that in the Navy who said, hey, you should have done a better job. So I know those who said I should have done a better job. I don't think any of them ever got involved in anything that complicated to my knowledge. And I know that I've tried court martials. I'm a trial and defense counsel during Korea. I've had a background in nothing but legal. And some of them were administrative only and never saw a day of combat and never had an occasion where they had to make up their mind about a matter such as we had in Liberty. And yet they can stand up and say, hey, you didn't dot an I here, you didn't cross a T. You've got an and on the bottom of one page, an and up there, which I tried to correct by scratching out one making. And I was told Mr. McNamara doesn't like to have it. Think corrections. And I said, well, I'm not doing any more. The record's there. And Admiral McCain said, don't worry about it. It's going back to Washington. And it did. But after all these years, and I know that Admiral Kidd felt like I did, but the political pressures, and of course he was tuned in on a different wavelength with the people in Washington than I, and I was merely the counsel of the court. I wasn't a messenger like Ike was carrying the record back. And when he was told to shut up and came back and told us to shut up, we did. And that's what I told the Navy Times, and that's about all I can say in that regard. Any more questions?
Just one final question on a slightly different subject, since I have a legitimate expert in front of me on this. I'd like to ask your opinion on the subject of bombing ships, obviously from the air. How would you characterize it in terms of difficulty for other pilots who are not necessarily naval pilots or people who fight at sea? People who are used to air-to-air combat or air-to-ground, how difficult or how easy do you think it would be for those types of pilots to successfully attack a ship with iron bombs?
Well, I was a fighter pilot. I wasn't a bomber. And one of my dear friends, Admiral Jig Dog Ramage, is still alive, bless his heart. In fact, I was able to get his name put on him. SBD over at the Aerospace Museum where I've been a volunteer for 20 years. And he told me that the greatest honor he ever had. He was one of the highest decorated naval aviators. And he was an SBD pilot, which was bombed in World War II. And of course, they came straight down. They didn't have all the technical equipment we have now. But it wasn't easy. I mean, no question. But I don't really see, and I'm not trying to avoid your question, but I don't see how there would be any problem with these Mirage jets. There are two jets, what's the other one? They were both French, I don't know. But they didn't have it. They didn't miss. The only thing was the torpedo boats. I think they shot four or five torpedoes, and only one hit amidships. And if that had, the dear Lord must have been with the crew of that ship, because if that had been a foot or so, I'd just told one way or it hit directly in between the supporting beams and the ship didn't go down. But when we boarded, by the damage control system said he felt we were going to go under. And we didn't, fortunately, got back. But they had a different, even with no opposition. It's almost like using tanks on kids throwing rocks. I mean, I don't want to draw that analogy with the current situation, but when I see, and then when you people talk about, oh, it's easy to fight a war. Well, the ones who say that have never been in war. And I know that the Air Force General, I still have his quotation someplace upstairs, who was the Air Force General in Iraq, in the Persian Gulf for the first time. And he said, there's nothing as high as a feeling coming back from a strike or from a mission. Then he said, the first time, one time you go into combat, the first run you make, that's the one that starts it all. But he said, after a while you realize how ridiculous it is to kill people and kill them innocently. And he was actually, I was surprised they printed it, but he said he was not in favor of that type of. But here, these jets and Liberty, they had no opposition. A little 50 caliber shooting back at 20 millimeter and 30 millimeter, and they even brought napalm on it and burned, and the whole ship should have gone under. But I'm not avoiding your question, but I can't give you a definitive answer. Iron bombs or whatever, if they had, would have made, if they'd gone down, say, they had come and stacked, if they had a stack, I don't know, they obviously, yeah, I know they had a stack, but if they put one down there, well, that'd have been death for them. But they didn't care, and it wasn't they need to. They had all they needed to sink that ship, and no question.
That was my point.
All they needed. But there again, I'm not running up and down the street. I'm not trying to write books or sell books. I'm just from the heart, from the deepest recesses of my conscience, I have to say that I can't imagine anybody, I don't care if it's a four-star admiral or a four-star general, standing up and supporting the Liberty incident, defending the people who committed it. Our harmless ship well outside of the international waters, or how inside should they, over 14 miles away, and then didn't know that they were given orders. In no way in the world they were culpable or negligent in this incident. And they were sitting ducks. And the poor kids that were sunbathing on the deck that lost their lives. And the OD and the executive officer. The 34 that were killed, including the people in the NSA spaces, it's sickening to think about it. And why they just kept going and going and going and trying to sink that ship. And nobody's been accountable since. Nobody. And we still support that thesis that deception in order to be rewarded with victory. It doesn't make sense to me.